Hello, America, and welcome to the Glenn Beck program. So glad that you're here. More on the Russia-Trump thing. Trump started to swing back this weekend, and I think it's actually going to help his poll numbers, which are the worst of any president in the last 70 years at this point in his presidency. Did the left hurt themselves and really cause the reaction that Americans are having to this right now, where they're yawning and saying, huh, all right, so move on? Is that something the left did? How does the left work? We have a little insight on that beginning right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Welcome to the program. We are glad that you're here. There's nothing really new in the Trump front that you need to know about with the Trump-Russia scandal. That's not going to stop the news media from reporting on it for hours and hours and hours and hours. But there is nothing really new here, except what the president's, you know, own people came out and what he tweeted about this weekend. We have gone from there was no collusion to, well, collusion's not a crime, and there was no crime here. And that actually is accurate so far. What we know is fairly accurate. That's why there's an investigation, and the media has nothing. When you look at the poll numbers of the president, he's down to 36% approval rating. Stu, were you surprised by that number?
Not really. If you look at it, he's been actually pretty stable approval rating-wise for about 2 months. Since about mid-May was when he fell to the levels where he kind of is now.
Was at, what, 42?
Yes, however, that's misleading. The ABC, I think it's an ABC poll that came out and said that.
Yeah.
The reason why that looks so bad is because the last time the poll was taken was April. So he had a fall off in mid-May that has he's stayed pretty darn consistent since mid-May. The issue is that poll was taken before that drop-off, so it looks like a bigger drop than is real.
So he didn't, when you look at it, you know, as the weeks go by, he didn't really drop off because of the Russia scandal?
I mean, certainly not this late. I mean, the latest meeting is probably a little too recent to see anything. I mean, I don't know. When would you say the Russia scandal started? I mean, at mid-May,
I would say,
it's 2 months,
no,
right?
I would say, no. I would say the scandal really, most people thought it was ridiculous. You know, I don't think anybody has changed their minds. No, I've changed my mind. I did not think that we would ever find anything like this.
Like the email.
Like the email. Right. I didn't believe in collusion for a second. No collusion. That was ridiculous to believe. Now you look at it, and there was at least a willingness to collude, and the Russians did reach out and say, hey, we're on your side. I never thought that. I thought the Russians just wanted to cause chaos. And, you know, I still believe that Donald Trump just may be a useful idiot to Vladimir Putin and not know that, you know, not know how this works. But, you know, this guy that is his friend over in Moscow is known now, we found out over the weekend, is known as, you know, Putin's fixer. So he is directly tied to fixing Putin's
problems.
Is that
the same guy from the pageant?
Yes.
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 He's
Putin's fixer. Yes.
Okay, good.
So,
but, you know, some
I don't think, Donald Trump knows that or knew that.
Probably not.
Yeah.
Some of the poll stuff is a little overblown, I think, in that, you know, like they're talking about him being the least popular president at 6 months of any in measured history. However, he also started as the least popular president of any in measured history. So it's not, you know, yes, he's fallen. He's fallen at a middle of the pack rate compared to other presidents. It's not like, you know, I mean, Gerald Ford is the most crazy example. He was a plus 68. And then he pardoned Nixon, and he was minus 6, so he fell by 74 points. Kind of the weird outlier there. But Barack Obama fell more. than Donald Trump has in the first 6 months. Bill Clinton.
Oh, I think he
Jimmy
is,
Carter.
I think he has a strong base. I don't know what really. I don't know what you're going to do to shake his base. I don't think there's anything you could do to shake his
base. Yeah, some polls are showing that he has literally lost zero support of people.
Yeah, I believe that. I believe that. And I think his support will go up. If this is all that turns up, I think his support will go back up.
The indication is the support is softening. The polling shows when he started, they break it up to strong support and lighter support, that a lot of the people who were strong supporters have navigated themselves to lighter support. So they're still kind of approving, but not a strong approval.
I don't see a heck of a lot of evidence of that.
I don't either.
Like the guy we played last week from Washington, that talk show in Washington, who cried.
Yeah.
He's in desperate straits, it sounds like, financially right now. He's just hanging on by the skin of his teeth. And even he is not disappointed in the job Trump does because he believes Trump's been blocked at everything he wants to do.
May I suggest that the left caused this problem? The media and the left caused this problem. And it just started with the inauguration weekend when they were marching during his inauguration. Well, what the hell are you marching against? You knew what you were getting. He's the president of the United States. Mm-hmm. Everything from the very beginning has been a scandal. And so when you actually stumble upon one, nobody cares or nobody's listening to you anymore. You have zero credibility. I think the media has caused this by not taking a moment after the election and saying, okay, wait a minute. What were we doing that caused half the country to look at us with a side eye? For instance, brought Jason in. He said that I stopped by his desk this morning and he was reading a book by Cheryl Atkinson. What's it called?
The Smear.
And I didn't even know this, but I apparently am a chapter in this book.
A good portion of a chapter.
Okay. And what does it say? What is the book about and what's it say?
Well, it's funny. When we didn't even know that you were going to be in this book. So I was like, I better read all through this. It was fascinating. But we saw actually a picture of your eyes on the book. And we're like, wait a minute, So I skipped to this portion, and it was all about how throughout history, the media has basically upped their game a little bit when they want to, you know, try to do a smear campaign or just spread fake news. And they pinpointed when David Brock and Media Matters went after you at Fox News, and they did their whole Dump Fox campaign, as a significant point where this completely spiraled out of control. I cannot believe the stuff that you guys went through. I mean, this is a crazy illustration. Like, she goes into talking about how David Brock and Media Matters at the time were so linked into the media. Like, the media would, they would, like, quote Media Matters, and they would just take their research as just facts.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
Just absolute fact.
It still happens.
And then they would listen to every single word that you would say. They hired a team of reporters, multiple writers who would already have these articles already written up. Yep. They would seize on one little thing, blow it out of proportion, instantly distribute
that. Take it
that
out of context, make it look like something it wasn't.
And that was actually based off of a model that they ran off of to ditch IMUS. They took that and were like, how can we take that model and up that game? Let's wreck Beck. And that's actually the title of this section. Is Wrecking Beck. But it was to say, like, they hired private investigators. And this is all in internal memos between David Brock and a guy named Carl Friesch, the guy that I think he tried to get Howard Dean elected. He was a Democratic strategist. Mm-hmm. They all went to work for Media Matters. And an internal memo, they were like, let's hire private investigators. Let's follow him everywhere he goes. Let's stake out every single event he goes to. Let's follow him around. Let's get any kind of dirt we can to use against this guy.
Yeah, it does sound familiar.
And then they launched other organizations underneath that were getting 100,000, 200,000 donations. Tons of money was going into this, specifically to target the people that were running ads on Fox. It sounds exactly almost like they did the exact same playbook against O'Reilly, it sounds like. Yeah. No, the exact same thing.
No, this is absolutely true.
Oh, yeah.
We
knew a lot of that was going on.
We sat in my office, I don't know how many days, and said, we could expose this today and no one will believe us. No one will believe what's been going on. I mean, they went through my trash. And it was on the right and the left. I am going to write a book about my time at Fox, because there's a lot to expose on the right and the left of what was done to me and my wife and my family. It was shocking what was done, and more so only because of the of where it was coming from on the right. When the right started doing it, I lost all hope. I was just like, oh my gosh. And the only thing that saved me, how many times have we said this? The only thing that saved me was I didn't have any skeletons in my closet. I mean, they paid, we had both
that's,
the right.
And let's be clear, that's just because you've opened the closet for everyone.
Oh yeah.
It's not because you haven't done anything horrible.
No, I've done, you know, all kinds of stuff, but I just let everybody know and said, okay, this is who I am. And so beat you to the punch. And
I mean, it might not be the entire closet. How much cash were they offering?
So this is what they learned it there. And this, their mistake is, I think they're overplaying their hand. They're too cocky now. They think that they can just take Donald Trump down. But Donald Trump, and this is why he's popular, is people instinctively know what Cheryl Atkinson has written. And what's the name of this book?
It's the
Smear.
The Smear. How shady political operatives and fake news control what you see, what you think, and how you vote.
Okay, so people instinctively know that.
And it's interesting you say that, because she makes the point at the very end. She was like, so the entire machine that was built around this and mostly perfected by what they did to you was that, hey, you go after them, you go after them, you go after them, you either get them fired or you force an apology and then they'll have to retract or something. That's how it's always worked. And that's how they've always played it. But Trump was what she called the wild card. He was the first one that didn't play it that way. Wow. They came after him with an allegation and he shot right back at him. And they were like, whoa, we don't know how to deal with this. He didn't apologize. He didn't step back. And for the first time, his supporters were like, see, that he
that's
has
why
resolved.
He won.
That's why he won.
He won.
And then eventually they were like, well, wait a minute. We don't trust anything that the media has been saying. They were wrong about, you know, they said that there was no possible way he could win. They were wrong about this. They're wrong about that. So now everyone is teamed up against him and it's completely backfired. Completely backfired. Mm.
We have to get Cheryl on.
Oh, yeah.
And have her on to talk about this. Does she pick up at all that the right is now doing this? Because the right use the same tactics. They'll use the same tactics on us or anybody else that stood against Donald Trump.
She goes on both sides. She talks about, I mean, she goes all the way back about how the left actually, David Brock was actually a conservative hitman back in the day. Remember Clarence Thomas when he was going for running for Supreme Court?
Yeah.
And he went after, I think it was Anita Hill at the time. The right were actually some of the biggest perpetrators in all of this. So she goes back and forth the entire time.
Yeah, well, we're not different. That's the one thing I did learn when I was at Fox. We're not all that different. Mm-hmm. There are those operatives that will do whatever they have to do just to win. And their winning looks almost identical to the other side's winning, which was mind-boggling to me. Thanks, Jason.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Oh, my God. So this. A spat of recent articles corroborate what I've already suspected, writes Reason Magazine, that holding elected office is the neurological equivalent of getting kicked in the head by a donkey. Dasher Keltner, a professor at the University of California, Berkeley, found that subjects under the influence of power acted as if they had suffered a traumatic brain injury, becoming more impulsive, less risk-aware, and crucially, less adept at seeing things from other people's point of view. In other words, power turns people into sociopaths. Well, I suppose it could do that, but I don't think it has to do that. I mean, I don't think that we all have to look at power like Frodo looked at the ring, do we?
I don't think so.
I mean, I think we've seen it happen many times before, but there have been people who are not like that in the end.
Not very many, but some. There are some. Are you interested in the engineering of super dogs and test tubes in China?
I love this. This is crazy. Have you seen this dog yet, Stu?
I saw a picture of it, yeah.
Okay.
It looked like it was Photoshopped.
If that's real, if that's real and not Photoshopped, that's unbelievable. The dogs are being bred in test tubes to be more muscular, and they wind up having twice the muscle mass of their natural counterparts. They're stronger, they're faster. And the next step, supposedly, with the Chinese, is to do this in humans and create weaponized superhumans.
Oh, that's great.
For, soldiers.
Yeah. That's that fantastic. Yeah, Hitler didn't get that done. And
if the Chinese could just get that done, maybe they can do it. Maybe they can get it done.
Well, they have enough disposable humans, don't they?
Yes, they do. I mean, they think they do.
Yeah.
1.4 billion people is
a lot of
people.
Yeah. They don't care. Yeah. That is terrifying.
I think so. I think it is. And when you see the dog...
Don't you think we're getting to the place...
the superhumans or the super dogs?
Both. Both are terrifying.
The soldier dogs.
Yes.
Yeah, the soldier dogs would be bad enough. The soldier people would be also very bad. Just thinking. Are we approaching a place to where... if you're religious at all in nature, you're like, God won't let us pass this point.
Why? Super dogs is the...
No, I don't think it's super dogs. I think it's super humans, artificial intelligence. This is the, kind of the point.
You're getting into a scary place. Yeah,
yeah, robot it's a place where you're like... those superhuman Chinese butt.
Does anybody over in China or does anybody in Silicon Valley, do they have children? Do they at all worry about the future? Like, you know, Bob, that sounds like an interesting idea, but maybe we shouldn't do that. Is that word ever spoken?
It's possible, but there also has to be the feeling that every single major technological advancement over the past 150 years was greeted by the same type of stuff. I mean, we're always fearful of this new stuff. And
yes, super intelligence is different. Artificial intelligence
is
always different. It is as unpredictable as a visit from the sky. Somebody, you know, all of a sudden there's spaceships around the world, ringing the earth. Do we think that that's going to end well?
If it solves cancer and it solves every disease and it could go through and change the way that we don't have to, you know, spend hours and hours coming to radio shows to put food on the table. Can you imagine the incredible advancements that could come from this? We all pray and hope it could do things. It could make food
plentiful. If it could just make the TV news go away and bring me blessed sleep, I'm for it.
Because, I mean, there is a point where you look at the Matrix situation where you're kind of just in a bath of goo in a pod somewhere, and it kind of sounds good. I mean, you know, right now...
I wouldn't get out of it. I'm not taking that pill.
Which pill do I need to take to get back to the pod? That's the one I want.
Yeah. Yep.
I think I'm with you.
Yeah.
When that movie came out, I was not with you.
No, I would be like, oh, no, I want to go into the gutters and fight. Nah, Alex, just give me the pod.
Give me the pill.
Give me the pill.
No, I'm totally fine.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
Hello and welcome to the program. It's from the Mercury Studios in Las Colinas, Texas, where it's about 9,000 degrees. And we're happy to be free, but we wouldn't mind a cooling trend from time to time. Who was it that saw a weather forecast that they said we haven't had a good hot summer streak yet?
There hasn't been a good streak yet, yes, here in North Texas.
How about June to now?
It hasn't hit 100 yet, though, has it? Maybe once?
Oh, I think just the heat index, right? I don't know that it's actually been a lot.
It's usually like 18 or 19 days during the summer, but that's coming this weekend, apparently. So.
Oh, good.
Yeah, don't speak too soon.
I was in California. California just has the perfect weather. California, why did they wreck it?
I don't know.
Why did they wreck it so? It is so perfect. But you could look at it this way. If they hadn't have wrecked it, it would probably have maybe 260 million people living there.
Yeah.
If everybody could afford to live there, that's where everybody would live. Because it's just beautiful and perfect.
And it's because of the heat and humidity that 200 million people don't live in Texas.
Yes. I can't even imagine this state without air conditioning.
Yeah. Well, more people are moving here than any other place. Maybe some of them are like me and enjoy the warm weather.
You enjoy this?
Oh, totally.
You like it when
it's
humid?
Do you really? This humid?
No, I mean, it's not the most preferred, but I would choose this over most places else in America.
Good heavens.
Oh, my gosh, no way.
I mean, you know,
I'm from the Mountain West, man, and I can't handle the humidity.
I got out of church yesterday. The steering wheel was 7,000 degrees.
Oh, my gosh, the car.
I couldn't even get near it.
Can't you start it before the end of service so the AC is running?
Oh, excuse me, Thurston Howell.
Mr. Planet Killer?
Pat is just too concerned with the environment.
I am just
to do
too
something like that.
Environmentally aware.
I did
to do
think about
like
buying
that.
One of those yesterday. I got out of church and I got in my car. I was like, it is so hot.
And don't touch the seatbelt metal.
Oh my God. You can really. Your kids can really burn themselves.
Yeah,
getting into the car.
I lived in Arizona. It is worse in cars in Arizona than it is in Texas. It's Arizona is
well.
Surface of the sun hot. When you open up your car door, forget about it. Just forget about sitting down. Everybody brings a towel. You have, I like that one with the black interior. Welcome to Arizona. First summer here.
When you're in the Northeast, people buy automatic car starters because of the winter. You get the car started.
Yeah.
Here, you use them in the summer. And so my car has one, but it has this feature where it starts for 10 minutes and then turns itself off. 10 minutes of running air conditioning on full blast in this state is not enough.
No, it's not.
Like, you have to do it 3 or 4 times to get it to a normal human temperature to be able to get in the car.
It's bad.
It is. It can be really rough.
Yeah, so welcome to it. I went to a double feature with the kids Saturday. I went and I saw Spider-Man, which I loved. It reminded me very much of almost like Michael J. Fox, Back to the Future kind of vibe. Spider-Man, I thought he was great. You know, there's a couple of lines in there that, you know, make it PG-13, but I thought it was great. I loved it, and I did not want to see it. I'm so sick of the reboots.
How many times have they rebooted that thing?
Yeah, it's Sony. They kept doing it over and over and over and over again. This is Marvel. So, and I expected Tony Stark, you know, I expected Robert Downey Jr., who I think is dead inside by now. He's like... I'm a real actor. It's like I'm a clown at a, you know, kid's birthday party.
Oh, he basically says that about these movies. Like, I was going to do one of these, and now I've done it so many times, and I keep saying I'm not going to do anymore, but I keep doing them.
Yeah.
He phoned it in on Iron Man 3 or whatever that was.
No, he didn't phone this one in. I mean, you know, it's not Shakespeare, but it's not bad. There's one scene where you hear his voice, and you're like, I think he literally phoned this part in. but I was pleasantly surprised. I thought it was really good, and I had given up on the Spider-Man.
I've heard
series.
Really good things about it. It's supposed to.
I liked it.
Some have said it's the best one of the series.
Oh, by far, I think.
It's interesting because people say you escape when you go to the movies, and you can tell Glenn's opinion on the world the more movies he sees, which is like now. Every single weekend, you've seen every single movie is essentially where you are.
I do use the movies. I thought about that this weekend. I sat down for it because Rafe and I first went to Planet of the Apes. We've been waiting for that for months and months and months.
Yeah.
Like a year ago when if you had the Planet of the Apes, Rafe cheered in the movie theater. And we're like, we're going opening weekend. And so he came back. So we watched that and then... We watched Spider-Man. The girls joined us for Spider-Man, and I did think of that. I thought, man, I am escaping. Mm. That's all I'm doing, just escaping.
So how was Planet of the Apes?
Loved it. Jeffy is ridiculous. Mm.
Oh, I told you that if you liked the other two, that you would like this
best
one.
Best of the three.
No, it's not the best of the three.
Best of the three.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
Isn't it sort of anti-human again, though?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Humans are the best.
Yes. Of course, yes.
Beings,
yes, of course.
The apes are the good ones.
Get over it. Yes,
I can't handle it. That's the premise.
It's been that way since 1972.
I can't take it.
It's been anti-human.
Not in the original 68 one. Maybe since 72, but the original with Charlton Heston.
Get off me, you dirty ape!
I thought the apes were the bad guys in that one.
Well, the apes were the bad guys in the other ones, too, some of them. I mean, Caesar is Caesar is the good one, and there are bad apes in this one as well. It's the deal is they're just like people, and the people don't realize
except
that
they're better than people.
Except no, they're just
they won't kill each other, right? You never kill another ape.
Yeah, they do.
You're not supposed to.
Yeah, they do. You're not ape, supposed to, but you do.
I mean, that's Caesar's rule.
Yeah,
ape don't kill ape.
Yeah. I will tell you, the CGI is unbelievable. You believe they are real.
Yeah, how the did motion they get capture. That? I mean, that's
how
circus,
did they get those chimpanzees to talk to each other? It's phenomenal. It's phenomenal.
It is, really. I love how far CGI has come. It's pretty amazing.
So here's the thing. Here's the thing. I said to Rafe, and I'm not spoiling anything.
No,
I'm not going to say anything about what's happening on the screen. I won't. But I said to Rafe at some point during the movie, I said, this is the Moses story. And he went, yeah. And I'm like, don't talk down to me. you haven't even turned 13 yet. Don't talk down to me. Mm. And he said, Dad, you just caught on? And I said, yeah. When did you catch on? He said, the first movie? What? Yeah.
I didn't and look that deep on this.
So we're movies. Driving home, and he tells me all the parallels of the Moses story, and you'll see it in this one. It's absolutely clearly based on the Moses story.
And, of course, it's the apes who are Moses, no doubt.
Well, Caesar,
yeah,
but
of course.
Caesar also is his side.
I don't know if I could handle
his
it.
His side is pierced at one
Did you
point,
like the
so
other
he
two?
Might be Christ.
Not really.
Did you enjoy, then you won't enjoy it.
Not really.
Oh, you didn't like the other ones?
Not really. I mean,
I love this.
They're okay. They were just okay.
Yeah, I thought they were. I liked the first one, and then the second one. I'm like, okay, I get it. I get it. Mm-hmm. And this one, I really liked. And Woody Harrelson is really good in it. He plays a good psychopath, surprisingly. He plays himself. Caesar says, aren't you the guy from Cheers?
And that's a weird line.
Yeah.
I thought you said you were going to give any of it away.
Oh, crap. Oh.
I think all of this, though, is just killing time until the release of Atomic Blonde in theaters in only 2 weeks.
Thank you very much.
We are all very excited about that here.
That's going to be fun.
So have you ever seen 2 Days in the Valley?
Yes. One of my favorite movies of all time.
Oh, my gosh. One of my favorite movies of all time. Yes. Yeah, it's her first. It was her first movie. And James Spader. One of the first times I ever saw James Spader.
What happened to him? Wow.
Oh, he was great in Boston Legal.
Yeah.
And then he's still doing...
Boston Legal was, 10 years ago?
No, he's still doing something, or was, Blacklist? Or
something big like that.
Oh, that's right.
That.
He
something
does
big
have,
like Blacklist.
A Netflix. Yes. A Netflix
no,
show.
I think that's ABC.
That's NBC, I believe.
Oh, is it?
NBC, ABC. CBS. One of the networks, but Netflix has picked up the past episodes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, and I watch it. It's way too dark for my taste.
Yeah,
but
it's pretty big guy.
But it's, I love him. I think he's one of my favorite actors.
That movie is great. Anyway,
sure, he loves you too.
It's hilarious.
2 Days
it's
in the funny. Valley?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's great.
What did you just say?
I said, sure, he loves you too. I remember right
now. No doubt about that.
They talked about you on Boston Legal. Didn't they trash you on Boston Legal in one episode?
Oh, they've trashed me on some of the greatest shows of all time.
Yeah, that's
Simpsons,
true.
Boston Legal.
I was sitting with somebody in Hollywood, and they said, have you ever been featured on The Simpsons? And I said, featured on The Simpsons? Homer played me for an entire episode. Yeah, I think I've been 3 episodes of The Simpsons. One full.
South Park, too, I think. Right?
Yeah, what?
Yeah, I you think get South Park. Park
yeah,
as well.
South Park. We should get those. I don't have it. We should catalog all those things where they just ripped me apart. Those were the
days.
There
were a lot of fun ones.
Good times.
They were. I laughed.
Good times.
Yeah. You know, Donald Trump. If they were doing to me the Saturday Night Live stuff, I think that's hysterical. I don't think there's a higher form of flattery. And the only way that you diffuse that is laugh at it. Donald Trump should go on Saturday Night Live with Alec Baldwin and make fun of himself better than Alec Baldwin.
That will never happen.
It will never happen.
It's not his style.
But it's not his style, but that's the way you diffuse that.
It's funny. These things came so fast. I remember watching a rerun of Saturday Night Live. I don't know, I guess it was maybe late last year, and it was from the time of the primary, and it started with a monologue from Ted Cruz talking to the camera. And in it, you're mentioned in the monologue. Glenn Beck is mentioned in the monologue. Think about what a weird life it is that Saturday Night Live
could mention my boss, the guy I'm in the room with every single day, and we didn't even get word of it. Like I didn't even know it occurred. We went through how many months before we even discovered that it happened? I mean, you're just learning about it right now by the look of your face. Yeah. I mean, and that's that has happened so many times now. And it's wonder, it is actually like I admire the stamina of Trump to be constantly offended by it. Like, it's like, to me.
Right. Sooner or later.
At some point, you do go dead inside. We were just talking about that Cheryl Atkinson book where she, you know, she talks about, you know, what they did and how they perfected the art of the smear on me. And Jason, who's reading the book, said, I can't believe what you guys endured. And I think we were off the air when Stu said, yeah, it just came a point where it was every day and we didn't even pay attention to it anymore. It's just, that's the way your life is.
Yeah.
And so it just doesn't, it really doesn't affect you. And it is pretty incredible how it still affects Donald Trump.
Yeah, I mean, and that's why, you know, some of the people who point out that this Trump is just doing this as part of a game. There's some, like, from our perspective, I don't believe it from him, but I mean, from our perspective, there is something to that. And that there were times, reading articles from things like Media Matters and being like, this will just be a fun break. I didn't look at it as an attack anymore. It was just like, oh, how can we use this to make the show good?
Yeah.
Like, it was really like, it wasn't something where it
worried. If I were on Donald Trump's staff today, I would be making a how to shake hands with Donald Trump video. And I would be making fun of CNN did a second-by-second analysis of Donald Trump shaking the hands of the French president.
Mm-hmm. Went on for 26 seconds.
Yeah, it went on for
28 seconds.
I'll give you, it's weird. He has this power handshake going on where he pulls you in and you can't get away from him.
Yeah.
And, you know, they talked about it. I mean, even Hillary Clinton, I saw a report where she was learning the art of the handshake of how to break it off with him. Now, he's perfected it, as you would see in this 28 seconds. But it's, I mean, that's really, that's CNN. That's what you're down to. You're doing a literal second by second. Here, watch this move. Watch this move. Watch this move. It was bizarre. But I would, if I were Trump, I'd be doing the same thing, how to shake hands with Donald Trump and make fun of it instead of just bashing them. Do something funny and you totally, they become a joke. Instead of something that is angry, everybody starts to laugh at them. And there's nothing that makes dictators or people who are high on themselves like the media more angry than making a joke about them.
The Glenn Beck Program.
So Stu bought himself a house over the weekend.
Yay!
Congratulations, Stu.
Really excited
he has
about it.
Never been a guy to buy a house. He has always believed in renting.
I still do, and, strongly.
Strongly.
I was.
But you just,
yeah, you just bought a house.
I didn't want to buy it, but
congratulations
I did buy it.
Thank on you. That.
Thank you. That's what everyone kept saying.
Giant liability.
Yeah, that's everyone kept saying that to me this weekend. Like, hey, congratulations, you bought a house. Oh, yeah, I have the largest liability I'll ever have. I own 10% of it, which is great. So thanks. I appreciate that. Because it's totally different than when I was renting the house, because we rented this exact house before we bought it. And it's like, well, it feels the same, except now I'm on the hook for the entire real estate market. Hey, this thing I can't control now controls my finances. Wonderful.
Congratulations.
That's great. I just want
to
go out.
So welcome to the club.
The good thing is you bought it at the
peak of the market.
Top of the market.
Absolute peak.
Oh, we won't be laughing long.
No.
All right. We'll see you tonight with the Think Tank at 5 o'clock on the Blaze TV. Don't miss it.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.